The Lord be with you. We struggle to take care of our family defined by blood, but Jesus cares for all God's family defined by love. And to explain what I mean by that, I want to tell you a story of where I was when I was on vacation last week. See, I went down to Albuquerque, New Mexico to go see my mom and my grandma and my grandpa. And one of the things we did all together, along with my wife and my daughter, is we took a tram from the bottom of the valley floor all the way up to the top of the Sandia Mountains. And as we got out of that tram, I saw something that I have never seen before in Albuquerque. I saw a group of people whose faces were covered in tattoos. I don't just mean like a few dots here and there, I mean broad strokes of ink covering their entire faces. And one woman was just her bottom chin, and I thought, well, that's very curious. And I also noticed they were trying to take a selfie. There were four of them. They were trying to take a selfie with the mountains and the valley in the background, and so I offered to take their picture. And they said, thank you, and I noticed they spoke with an accent. And so I said, well, where are you from? They said, we're from New Zealand. Well, how cool was that? My grandpa had been to New Zealand, so we chatted for a little bit and went on. And then a little while later, my family wanted to get our picture taken. So I thought, well, let's go ask the New Zealanders to take our picture. And so here's the picture they took of us. There you go. You can see us all together there. Now, I was happy to leave it at that. I took their picture. They took my picture. We're square. Everything's fine. Yeah? My mom, however, said, well, who are you? Like, where are you from? But you wanted to know everything about them. Turns out, not only are they from New Zealand, but they're a group of people called the Maori, who are the indigenous Polynesian people of New Zealand, hence the facial tattoos, right? That's a distinctive part of their culture. And it turns out they are in Albuquerque because they're a group of scientists at a conference, and their research is learning how to restore ocean life after it's been destroyed by pollution. And they have found, in particular, that the traditional Maori techniques of caring for the ocean life are one of the best ways to restore vibrancy to the ocean. Well, today we hear in the gospel that it takes place during the festival of dedication in the winter. And you may say to yourself, I don't know anything about the festival of dedication. But you do, my friends. You know there is a Jewish holiday celebrated in the winter, but we call it Hanukkah. Yeah. It's called the Festival of the Dedication in the Bible because Hanukkah was celebrating the dedication of the temple after it had been polluted by Greek pagans. Israel had been conquered by Greeks. Greeks don't worship our God. They worship the pagan gods. And so one of the kings decided this temple in Jerusalem should be dedicated to Zeus, and that they should start sacrificing pigs in it. You can imagine that did not go over well with Jews, yeah? So there was a family of Jews, a bunch of brothers, who became called the Maccabees. And the Maccabees led a revolt against these Greek overlords, and they drove them out. And the first thing they did when they drove out the Greeks is to rededicate the temple to God. And one of the ways in which they did that was to light a menorah in the center of the temple, which is why that candelabra, that menorah, is the symbol of Hanukkah. Right? It is fundamentally a story about using traditional techniques to purify a sacred space that had been polluted. It's exactly what these Maori scientists were doing. I was so excited when I heard them say this. I wanted to learn more. My grandma, however, had different needs. Yeah, I don't know if you noticed in that picture, my grandma is approaching 90. Her health is not great. It's also over 10,000 feet on the top of the Sandias. You might have seen there were clouds in the background. It was a windy, cold day. And so we were chatting about ocean restoration, and my grandma said, I need to go. And I said, well, you know, Grandma, yes, we'll go shortly, but let's chat with these people for a little bit, yeah? And my mom has, of course, decided that these folks need to come to Mexico, because that's where my mom is from. She's from Mexico. And she, oh, you gotta come do research in Mexico. It's wonderful. You'll love it. And at this point, my grandma says again, I need to go. I say, okay, Grandma, yeah, just give us a second, though. And at this point, my mom and these scientists are having a conversation about the type of fish that we eat in Mexico. And my mom really doesn't know this, but she's doing her best to try to convince them to come and visit my family down in Mexico. And at this point, my grandma says again, I need to go. It says in our gospel that during this festival of dedication, the Jews came to Jesus and said, tell us plainly, are you the Messiah? Why are you keeping us in suspense? And there's a couple things you need to know about what they're asking. First is, even though the Maccabees liberated Israel from the Greeks, that freedom didn't last long because Rome came along and conquered Israel too. Yeah? Jerusalem is currently under Roman occupation when this question is asked. This question is also asked, it says, in the portico of Solomon. The portico of Solomon is the oldest part of the temple in Jesus' day, because the temple had been destroyed and rebuilt, but the portico of Solomon was one of the few parts that had remained from when King Solomon had built the first temple nearly 1,000 years ago. When Solomon built that part of the temple, Israel was at the height of its power, and even in Jesus' day, the current king, King Herod, had lined the portico of Solomon with treasures from all his defeated enemies. And so it's in this place, the portico of Solomon, where Israel's greatest might is remembered, where its current victories over enemies are celebrated, during the festival of the dedication, when the foreigners were driven out so they could repurify their nation, that the Jewish people asked Jesus, are you the Messiah? They are asking, are you the new Maccabee? Are you the new Messiah who's going to drive out the Romans and free us so that we can finally focus on the people who matter, the people of Israel? Are you going to take care of our family, Jesus? And when my grandma said, for the third time, I need to go, that is what I heard. I heard her asking me, are you going to take care of me, Ben? And I said, well, of course, Grandma. Yeah, like, we need to prioritize this in this moment. And as much as I loved meeting these other people, I said to them, excuse me, we have to go. My grandmother is not comfortable here. And they said, well, of course, we respect our elders. You have to take care of your grandmother, by all means. And they were very kind. And we started to walk away, right? My grandpa and I, we each took my grandma by the arm, and we started walking. My wife took our daughter by the hand, and we started walking. And we started walking up to where the tram would take us down the mountain. And I looked around. I realized my mom was not with us. My mom was still talking to those Maori scientists, and I think, well, okay, she's just saying goodbye, she'll catch up. And so we get into the station where we catch the tram, and we get in line, and my mom is still talking to the Maori scientists. We get to the front of the line, are about to hand over our tickets, and my mom is still talking to those Maori scientists. I go out, I leave the line, I go out, and I wave to her, trying to get her attention so she'll leave. And the announcer over the loudspeaker says, all aboard, this is the last call for the tram. I go, Mom! And she starts running. She gives one last hug, and then she starts running. And she comes on up, and as she gets into the door of the tram station, the tram starts to go down the mountain. During this season of Easter, we have been reading through the book of Revelation. Today we read chapter 7. Beth read that for us. Thank you, Beth. Before the section she read, there's a few more verses. And in those verses, it says that there's going to be a great tribulation, because the book of Revelation is about the end of the world as we know it, but the beginning of the world as God intends it. And so that means there's a transition, right? When the world as we know it ends, it's going to be uncomfortable, because we only know this world. But in the beginning of Revelation chapter 7, it says that there will be a certain number of people who will be sealed before that tribulation happens. And what that means is there are people who won't have to suffer in the way that everyone else will. And it says that the number of folks who will be sealed is 144,000, 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes of Israel. And many Christians take this to mean that those 144,000 will be the only people to make it to heaven. Because you see, on the tram to heaven, there's a limited number of spaces. And if you don't get on that tram in time, you're going to get left behind. That's how I felt when my mom didn't show up for the tram. Left behind. I was so mad at my mom in that moment. And I know today is Mother's Day, so maybe that's not the best thing to say. Thank you. I love you, Mom. I know you're watching. But in that moment, I wanted my mom to be a Maccabee. I wanted my mom to be a Messiah in the sense of the person who's going to push away all the other people who are a distraction and take care of my family. And she didn't do it. But you know, Jesus says to this question, are you the Messiah? Tell us plainly. He says, I've already told you, and you don't believe me. He says, the works I do in my Father's name testify to me. And let's talk about the works that Jesus has done. Because they don't include raising an army. They don't include driving anyone out of Israel. They don't involve putting a line in the sand between Jews and Gentiles. In fact, Jesus' acts seem to do all the very opposite. Jesus heals. He restores sight to the blind. He transforms water into wine and multiplies loaves and fishes to feed a multitude. Jesus creates abundance where people can only see scarcity. He creates wholeness where we can only see brokenness. And even in the moments when Jesus is confronted with the ancient enemies of the Jewish people, the Samaritans or the Canaanites, Jesus time and time again proclaims that God's blessing is for them also. Jesus tells us that there is no limit to God's love. That it multiplies, and that God creates abundance where we can only see scarcity. And in fact, my bet is most of you have not thought of Hanukkah as a day celebrating driving out foreigners, because most Jews today don't celebrate Hanukkah that way. They call it a festival of lights more often than they do the festival of dedication. Because when the Maccabees went to dedicate that temple once again to God, they went to light a menorah as part of that ceremony. And to light the menorah, they needed oil that was pure oil blessed by the high priest and not tainted by pagan foreigners. And when they went into the temple, they could only find one container of oil that was still sealed with the mark of the high priest. All the others had been opened by Greeks. And that one container of oil was just enough to light the menorah for one day. But the ritual required the menorah to be lit for 8 days. Now, you could always just go make more oil, except that to make pure oil for this menorah, you had to be ritually pure. And the only men in Jerusalem at this moment were warriors who just stabbed a lot of people, which makes them ritually impure, yeah? And that purification process takes 7 days. And so while they wanted to purify the temple as soon as they could, they lit the menorah, but then they said, wait, we won't have enough oil to finish what we started. What will we do? And yet that one day of oil, it lasted 2 days, and 3 days, and 4 days, and 5 days, and 6 days, and 7 days, and 8 days. And that is what most Jewish people celebrate about Hanukkah today. They call it a festival of light because when the light of the world should have gone out, because there was not enough to keep it burning, it kept going. Where we saw only scarcity, God provided abundance. John, the disciple John, sees in the book of Revelation chapter 7, 144 people who've been sealed. And many Christians say, well, that's it. That's all that are getting in. But then what we heard today is that John looks again. And when he sees the second time that he looks, is a countless multitude, more people than he could count. And it says that there are people from every nation, from every tribe and ethnicity and language. And this countless multitude of people are all gathered around the throne of God, worshiping the Lamb who is Jesus Christ. It is a vision that at the end of all this story, there is not a limit to God's love, that there is no limitation to the number of peoples who will be included in round that heavenly throne. There is no limit based on space or number or nationality, that we will all be one in Christ in that moment. When my mom came in to that tram, to the tram station, and I was so mad at her, the first thing she said is, well, I had to say goodbye to them properly, and then they wanted me to give you this. And she took out first a beautiful pair of earrings that were carved with Maori design for Annalisa, and then she pulled out a green stone, which is found only in New Zealand. And it's a special stone that the Maori use as a gift. They pass it from one person to the next. And the idea is each person who holds the stone places some of their spiritual power in the stone, and it gets passed on to the next person who received it. They wanted to give that to us, to me. And then, of course, she had their contact information so that we could stay in touch and hopefully get them to go down to Mexico. And part of the reason they did this, my mom is charming, I'm sure that helps, but the Maori have this belief that ultimately we are all related. And so the first thing they try to do when they get to know someone is ask, well, who are you related to? And they try to work their way back until you can find a common ancestor. Now, look, I'm Mexican-Irish, and they're from New Zealand. The odds that we have anyone in common are very slim, except they all said, you know, we all have Irish ancestry. Because, you know, those Brits, they like sending people over to that part of the world. Well, I'm a Colahan. And so then we started talking about what county are our ancestors, right? They saw in that moment not some stranger from the other side of the world. They saw a member of their family who's been separated from them for centuries. John, who writes the book of Revelation, has asked to him, who are these people, this multitude of crowds around the throne of God? And he says, well, maybe you know better than I. How about you tell me? And this angelic voice says to him, these are they who have come through the great ordeal. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Which is to say, they are our family. They are a family not born of biology, a family not born of human blood in the birthing canal. They are people born out of God's love. They are born out of the blood that comes from the side of Jesus on the cross. And they are family not just in the nice sense of, oh, we're all family together. These are family who have gone through the great ordeal altogether, because true family shares our struggles, cares for us when we are weak, and we care for them when they are weak. And that is the difference between family and a stranger. And that is the reason why God's abundance never runs out. Because it's true, right? If we just go out on the street and give part of ourselves away to every stranger who passes by, we will run dry. We are limited human beings, and our light will fizzle. But if instead we make each and every person we encounter a member of our family, someone who will share their gifts with us as we share our gifts with them, then God's abundance only multiplies. The Maori know this, which is why they gave us gifts. But my mom has always known this. Now, my mom is from Mexico, but she moved up to the United States to go to college, and she did so because her mother remarried an American, a good old boy from Oklahoma, who I call Grandpa. And when she came up here, she worked real hard to keep in touch with her family down in Mexico, but they are thousands of miles away. And so throughout my childhood, my mom would always be introducing me to folks from all over the world, inviting them over for dinner, having me go to their house. And that meant when I went this past week to visit my family in Albuquerque, not only did I see my mom and my grandparents, every day was packed trying to see all these other people that my mom had made my family. My godfather is Chinese/Filipino, right? The equivalent of my aunts and uncles are Argentine Lebanese folks. my best friends are part of a Norwegian-Mexican family, and every time we visited these people throughout the week, they loaded us up with gifts to the point we know this is going to happen. We only pack our suitcases half full so we can receive everything they want to give us. They can't see us every day. They can't take care of us every day, but they are family, and they pour out their love and blessings on us because my mom has poured out her love and blessings on them and made them family. Jesus says, my sheep hear my voice. I know them, and they follow me. There are so many voices we can listen to in this world, my friends. Voices that tell us we don't have enough, that there isn't enough, that we need to make our family smaller. That's the voice that I listen to. The voice of my anxiety, the voice on the loudspeaker saying, this is the last chance, you gotta take it to get down. My mom listened to a different voice. She listened to the voice of family whose name she didn't know yet and strangers from across the world. She listened to the voice of Jesus. To believe, my friends, is not to have an intellectual idea. It is to trust God's word enough to act on it. Jesus says that what the Father has given him is greater than everything else. And that no one can snatch those whom the Father has given him out of his hands. My mom trusts that on a level that I still strive to achieve. And so she acts on it, trusting that Jesus will take care of our family, even as she's loving people and making them new members. And you know what? God did. It was another 20 minutes before another tram came and we could get down, but inside that tram station, we were out of the wind and out of the cold, and my grandma was just fine. And when she needed to use a bathroom, the Maui went and found the bathroom and helped her get to it. We were in God's hand the whole time, but we were blessed with family who could care for us in the midst of it all. This is Mother's Day. There are many people who are moms to us in many different ways. But today, our Good Shepherd calls us to hear his voice and to become a mother in the way that he is, as one who gives birth to God's family, not through human blood, but through divine love. For as one family, we will find we have everything we need. Amen.